This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico. More than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
What's Congress doing still at work this time of year? There's news this morning that a Japanese company has agreed to buy U.S. Steel for about $15 billion. Nippon Steel is the buyer. U.S. Steel was itself formed in a merger with Andrew Carnegie's steel company more than 120 years ago. Phil Gibbs is Managing Director, Metal Equity Research at KeyBank Capital Markets. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
How did U.S. Steel end up in this position? I mean, this is a storied company in 20th century U.S. industrial history, but these have been tougher times.
Yeah, after the tariffs were put in place more aggressively under the Trump administration, and even prior to that in the late stages of the Obama administration, I think that that gave pricing for their products a lot of padding. They went in and then made a very bold acquisition of Big River Steel. Big River Steel was a 3 million ton electric arc furnace steel mill built in Osceola, Arkansas, several years ago. But what really sets it apart is very low labor content, very flexible metallics strategy. They can use a lot of different things in their furnace, and they can make some of the wider and thicker slabs required to make automotive grades, which a lot of the historical low-cost capacity cannot do. And that is, they've grown that footprint that really gained the attention of not only domestic steelmakers, but global steelmakers. And I really think the highlight or the asset that Nippon was after was Big River. But this company has really turned itself around from a footprint standpoint, asset quality standpoint, and balance sheet standpoint. I think that's kind of how we've gotten here from just an overall interest. And I don't know if U.S. Steel necessarily had a great succession plan as well. So I think that this sort of meets that path.
So is this acquisition, you think it's a slam dunk? I mean, shareholders still have to approve, and I assume antitrust regulators.
Yeah, I would think it's probably closer to having the potential to be closed under this scenario. There were a handful of different permutations that were being floated by the marketplace in terms of who would buy it, if there would be co-buyers, would there have to be carve-outs? I think in this case, you have one owner, which is U.S. Steel, basically just being taken out by another owner in Nippon Steel, in the sense that they don't have a lot of U.S. market presence right now. They have some joint venture agreements with the likes of ArcelorMittal, but I think it doesn't really raise any meaningful antitrust hurdles, in my opinion, whereas some other scenarios would have. I would say that's the first point. I would say, secondly, again, we had heard that this was going to be probably closer to an $11 billion enterprise value takeout, and it closer to $15. So you're talking about a difference between a $40 stock price and a $55 stock price at U.S. Steel. And the stock was trading as low as $20 in the summer. So I think this is a win for U.S. Steel shareholders. So I think they'll be gladly accepting.
Phil Gibbs is Managing Director, Metals Equity Research at KeyBank Capital Markets. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Congress has delayed its holiday break with the Senate in session for the first part of this week. A key issue is President Biden's request for aid for Ukraine and Israel. Negotiators are still trying to reach a compromise on a separate but sweeping issue, immigration. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has more.
Negotiations on a border security immigration package continued over the weekend, but there's still no deal. And a group of Republican senators sent a letter to party leaders yesterday criticizing what they called the rushed and secret border negotiations and calling for a Senate GOP meeting in January. The House has already left for its holiday break. Todd Harrison, a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute, says the delay is devastating for Ukraine. He says Ukraine relies on the U.S. not just for weapons, but also to keep its government running and pay government workers.
That do all kinds of things to make sure that your power grid stays up, that your, you know, clean water keeps flowing, that, you know, all of the essential services of government, they require money.
Harrison says President Biden has requested around $60 billion for Ukraine. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Just about every year we do stories about whether the Santa Claus rally exists. Not Santa Claus, that's a different matter. We're talking the Santa Claus stock rally, where prices seem to get a bump this time of year. This time around, more than a bump in recent weeks, as the Federal Reserve has pointed to lower interest rates ahead with inflation calming down. Let us consult Julia Coronado. She's founder and president of Macro Policy Perspectives and a professor at UT Austin.
It's been quite a rally and pretty concentrated in a few names. We got a little bit of pushback after the Fed meeting from certain speakers who wanted to say, hold on, things are good. They may not be that good. We'll see how the rally lasts through year end.
Looking at the economic calendar, I love how on Friday, when so much of civilization is going to be focused on finishing the holiday shopping, that the macro econ nerds, and I think our friends at the Federal Reserve, are going to be focused on core personal consumption expenditures, right? That's the big thing the Fed likes to watch as a measure of inflation.
Yes, that's right. And as far as we can tell, we're going to get a flat reading that will bring the annual rate of inflation very close to 3%. So we're still not at 2%, but we are motoring down at a pretty nice pace.
Economist Julia Coronado in Austin.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.
When the Taliban captured the capital of Afghanistan, Kabul, more than 2 years ago, tens of thousands of Afghan people were evacuated by the U.S. for their own safety, but many were left behind and are taking a riskier route to the United States. The BBC's Reagan Morris traveled to Tijuana on the U.S.-Mexico border, where Afghans have been arriving in record numbers since 2021.
Shukriya cries as she shows me footage of her journey across 11 countries to get from Afghanistan to Mexico.
Oh, your leg is gashed from the jungle.
The photos show cuts they got from walking through rough terrain. Some show the young family sleeping on the streets. Torrential rain in Panama as they climb a mountain. And then she shows me a close-up of her daughter's face.
So they punched your 9-year-old daughter to get money.
Her eye bruised black and blue. Shukriya is not her real name. She wanted to conceal her identity to protect family still in Afghanistan.
I could do it.
Many migrants hire smugglers to cross the Darien Gap in Panama. But Shukriya and other Afghans relied on directions they found on social media. And they just followed the crowd. Thousands of people now pass daily through the jungle, which was once considered impassable.
When we were crossing, we saw many dead bodies. That was the most tragic part of the travel.
Sophia was a student at the American University in Kabul, which made her eligible for a U.S. evacuation flight in 2021. But in all the chaos, she couldn't get through the crowds which mobbed the airport.
We were left behind, and then the U.S. embassy told us that you can go to Pakistan and fill a form, and we will process your case. But we stayed more than a year in Pakistan. But still, our case was not getting processed.
The Latina Muslim Foundation opened this shelter in 2022 to give the growing number of Muslim migrants in Tijuana a place where they could pray and eat halal food and sleep safely in separate men's and women's dormitories.
Outside the shelter, you can see the border wall. We are like a stone's throw away. And these Afghans and others we spoke to inside, they can't really do much but stay within the confines of that shelter because they don't feel safe outside. They're afraid they'll get arrested. So they stay inside waiting and waiting for an asylum appointment at a time when the U.S. government is potentially making asylum claims much more difficult.
They try every day to use the U.S. government's new CBP One app to get an appointment to claim asylum. The app was meant to simplify the process, but it hasn't. Some people get an appointment right away. Others say it just glitches and crashes all the time. Some wait weeks or months.
And that's why when they don't have any other options, they have to cross illegally to U.S.
How long have you been here?
I have been here more than 2 months.
Even if they do make it to the United States, their future is uncertain. The Afghan Adjustment Act, the legislation proposed by the Biden administration to grant permanent residency for many Afghan refugees, is stalled in the U.S. Congress. And with lawmakers debating ways to make claiming asylum much more difficult, their journey is far from over.
In Mexico, I'm the BBC's Reagan Morris for Marketplace.
We're also covering news this morning that a Japanese company has agreed to buy U.S. Steel for $15 billion. Nippon Steel is the buyer. U.S. Steel rejected a smaller offer from the Ohio-based firm Cleveland Cliffs. I'm David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Jerez, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.